live with it. And it was very convenient. I mean, better timing couldn't have had, you know. Yeah.
So it was the right time.
So no problem. So I thought we continue with verse 125, because, you know, we're not going to miss many, and it's all about how the Buddhas will be disappointed. No, disappointed is not the right word, but will be sad if we get angry at beings, because of course their sole purpose of existing is to benefit all sentient beings. So we are kind of followers of the Buddha, and then what do? We kind of, you know, we harm them and we get angry at them and like that. And again, you can ask, what about righteous anger? Every anger thinks it's righteous. Whoever. I'm not looking at anybody in particular. Maybe you noticed it in the last meditation. Whenever you're angry, you think you're right. It's justified to be angry. And everybody feels like that. You know? And everybody who receives the anger feels it's not justified. Did you notice? Huh? Yeah? So it's like, it's the same for everybody. So that's why every anger is righteous. Every anger, because otherwise, if that anger wouldn't think it's right, why would it be angry? Why would we have it? It's as simple as that. Okay, so it's just a few verses left. Actually, I think we did quite well. And if you were here last year, now you really. If Ken Gyatso is asking, what about sixth chapter, Shantideva, you can say yes. We did all of it. Okay, 125. From now on, for the sake of delighting in the dustly gone Buddhas, I shall act with definite restraint as a servant to the world. Let mobs of people kick me in the head with their feet or even beat me to death, I shall not venture anything back. Let the guardians of the world take delight. Okay, this is somebody who wants to attain enlightenment. This is somebody who firmly believes in rebirth. This is somebody who thinks saving my life now for the sake, you know, like killing somebody else now for the sake of guarding my life, it's not worthwhile. I'd rather die than to be reborn in the hell state. Now, of course, many of you don't have this view, so you can't think like this. Because if you think it's finished at the time of death, then, yeah. I remember my teacher, at one point somebody asked him, yeah, but what if somebody comes to attack you and then you kill the person? And he said, well, then somebody dies, isn't it? So the person said, yes. And then my teacher said, well, then why not you? Huh? Yeah, why not you? Why the other one?
Why the other one? Why be not him?
Exactly. Why?
No, he says the other one.
He's saying yes to
you.
If it's the same, why not to kill it? Because it's your count.
Because it's then, you know, it's because we think we're so important, it has to be the other one when he attacks us. That's what we think. This, why not him, this then it doesn't matter. But we are so convinced that we have a right to kill him because he attacks us. In Buddhist terms, there's nobody who started it because it's just a ripening of karma.
But you will kill him so we won't have the bad karma of killing him.
If you are ready to go, if you're ready to go to the hells because of that, yes. But if you just do it to protect yourself, in terms of karma, you're not creating the karma to attain enlightenment and liberation. But as I said, this is for the Buddhists. You do whatever you want to do with your life. You go ahead and kill anybody you want to kill. It's your karma. You know, when people, my schoolmates, and they know that, you know, that don't kill mosquitoes and this and that, and then there's a mosquito, they go like, and then I'm there, and they go, oh! I said, look, I don't care. It's your karma. It doesn't affect me. That makes them think.
Yes, but what happened if someone
Maybe. Maybe he only wanted to kill you. How do you know? He told you, he phoned, he said, you'll be the first 9 more to come.
For example, in the Holocaust.
Yeah.
It's a good example.
Yeah.
Killed the not one,
yeah.
Killed the
thousand. Yeah. So why didn't they get killed? Why did they not get killed? Why did they not get killed? Because there was no possibility to kill them. Do you think we can stop wars through killing? Honestly? Do you think we can kill, we can stop, really stop this violence on this planet through killing? Okay, we continue to kill. I'm saying, I'm not judging you, I'm not telling you not to kill. If you want to continue to kill, just do. Fine. The right attitude? No. You know, there's this Zen story, okay? There's a samurai again coming to see a master, and he says, I'm this thing keeps falling down. So he says, I'm going to kill you. And then the master says, now you are in hell with this anger. And then he puts the sword down, and then the master says, now you are in heaven. So if somebody is asking me, what would you do if somebody is out to kill you? Well, I have very little chance to really defend myself. I never have a weapon. I'm 65 years old. I'm not very strong. The only thing I wish then, I will die peacefully without having anger in the mind against this person. This is why I practice. This is my wish. I can't protect anybody. Me. How? Yeah, sure. Of course. Look, I'm against killing, you're for killing, we have different views. Well,
I'm not for killing, you. But I gave you an example.
Yeah, and I gave you the other example. If it would be as simple as that, why didn't they get killed when they started the Holocaust?
Some of them were killed.
Yeah, did.
Very few, but
yeah, very few, and it didn't help, did it? I mean, the others continued. You know, we would have very few people on the planet if we would go around killing everybody that we dislike.
If they succeed to kill Adolf Hitler when they
yeah, before. Yeah. Okay, Adolf Hitler is dead. Let's look at the situation now. You know, terrorists get killed and killed and killed and killed. And what happens?
More.
Let's look at the situation now. You know, His Holiness very often says, this warfare that we did like years ago is outdated today because of technology. People with tech, you know, like somebody goes in a plane and kills 2,000 people just like that. We have to start thinking differently here. How can we make peace?
Of course,
this is the best. Yeah, exactly. And you're not going to make the terrorists your friends if you kill their leaders. Exactly. So why do you always bring the Holocaust if every situation is different?
Because the Holocaust is an example that killing was, in my opinion, justified.
Killing the Jews?
No, killing the Nazis.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Okay, I'm not, I don't know, I'm. What can I say? I wasn't alive then, you know. Shall we continue with the verses? Okay. So this is what I'm saying. This is definitely not for everybody, this verse 125. But actually, it is for me. I find this very inspiring to encourage me if somebody is out to kill me and I cannot, how to say, I cannot defend myself, that at least I die peacefully without anger in the mind. You know? If just the wish not to be killed will protect me, it doesn't protect me because everybody has the wish not to be killed. Sometimes we do get killed, sometimes by cars, sometimes by weapons, you know. Sometimes intentionally, sometimes unintentionally, and we die anyway, and then we are reborn. So like that. 126. There's no doubt that those with compassion, self-nature, those are the Buddhas, have taken all wandering beings to be the same. as themselves. The very nature they've seen as the essential nature of limited beings is those guardian self-nature. So why don't I show them the same respect? Okay, again, I know it's also me who's always going back to the Holocaust. But what I give you what my teachers, or what the teachers usually answer, because also Kitsenchab Rinpoche, to that very same question, he said, look, killing Hitler does not help because his mind continues. His negative mind continues. You need to get this person and change his mind so that he understands what he is doing. You see, if you only believe in life, in one life, of course, killing, finished, you know, they're gone. But in Buddhist terms, they're not gone. These negative minds are still around with the same instincts. They get reborn in hell many, 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 many times, most probably. You know, he's suffering enough. You don't need to worry about that one. They will be they will have a lot of suffering existences for a long time, but if they do not transform their mind during that time, because as I said, suffering is not necessarily make somebody a better person, they will, with the same instincts, they are born again. So if you want to help the world, you need to change their mind and not kill them. Could, you know, I mean, even Hitler, it wasn't his first lifetime. Why did he have so much success? Because he had a lot of positive karma that people believed him. Mao Zedong, same thing. This, you know, having success and believing in comes from previous lives. He might have some residues of positive imprints, which then, at the time of one death, it again ripens as human. Not necessarily. He might have had a lot. He might have had a lot. We don't know. You know, creating negative karma is not necessarily exhausting the positive one. It just creates negative. And then you have both still on the mind stream. Yeah, so it's the same thing. If you do mitzvahs, it's not necessarily kicking out the negative ones. You need these four factors to purify negative karma. Otherwise, you just create, you have both in the mind stream. They can, you know, same as red seeds and red seeds for red flowers and white flowers, they can coexist together. Yeah? So that's what I mean. You see, let go of an image of God who punishes. It's the mind who is creating the karma, and it nothing else, not a god, not a Buddha, you know, nobody. There's no judge there. You are your subtle mind, your consciousness or your conscience is the only judge there. And who knows, you know, he might have died very happy, thinking that he managed to kill so many people, not only Jews, also homosexuals, communists, and many other beings also, you know. With Hitler, we can see that that's perverted, isn't it? But he thought he was right. That's why people believed him, because he was so convinced. If he would have thought that it's not right what I'm doing, nobody would have followed him. Can you see how perverted the mind can be, that you think it's good what you're doing? In that case? Okay, so 126, we had, there is no doubt that those with compassion self-nature, meaning the Buddhas, have taken all wandering beings to be the same as themselves. Like a Buddha is not taking himself more important than the... Okay, we let Hitler stay in peace and gone than anybody else. Us. The very nature they've seen as the essential nature of limited beings is those guardian self-nature. So why don't I show them the same respect? Even Hitler has Buddha nature. If he reads the right conditions for the Buddha nature to come out, he will become a Buddha. Oh, he does not deserve it. That's the best way to save the world, if everybody becomes a Buddha. Yeah, with the extra brain here.
He
He was also a vegetarian, so what? He still had wrong views. Yeah, so that's what the same as you're saying. Why don't we kill bad people? Not out of anger, but out of reason. Have you... No, it's not. This is the bad thing about it, you know. It seemed to be totally normal. I mean, if you look at Eichmann's process here in Israel, where he just said, I just did my duty, and that's it. And then Hannah Arendt was trying to explain what he was doing, and then all the Israelis and Jews were getting angry at her. She's an amazing person, by the way. She was, yeah. Wow, you know. That, without any spiritual practice, that kind of sharp thinking and logical thinking and really the right ways, like the banality of evil. This is what we should admire, huh? Okay, so this one. So we should respect all beings. Why? Because all of them have Buddha nature. And we should put a lot of effort into bringing out that Buddha nature instead of killing them. Okay? Just this is what brings pleasure to the dustly gone Buddhas. Like we are, again, this is for the Buddhists. Of course, I'm very happy that there's Buddhas, because otherwise I wouldn't know these methods. So if I'm happy about the presence of somebody, I also want them to be happy, because otherwise they might turn away from me. The Buddhas don't. But there's one interesting thing with this. The Buddhas will never turn away from you. Never. Nor from bad people, nor from us. Okay? Because they have equanimity. They see that everybody has Buddha nature. Their interest is bringing out this Buddha nature. Why we need to know that is so that we still seek help when we have behaved in a really bad way. Because when you behave in a bad way, you feel guilty and you separate yourself from the people that love you because you feel ashamed. This is a psychological thing. This is why we constantly need to remind ourselves, even if I behave really badly, you know, the Buddha is not going to be angry at me, but I have to stop behaving badly because I put up the barrier between me and the Buddha because I feel ashamed. And I see that in myself when I had like also fights with others. And blah, blah, blah. I wasn't happy when Rinpoche was there. I wasn't happy to go and see him until I learned to confess. And then it was okay. Then I was happy that I could kind of just open up and say, oh, Rinpoche, you know, compassion, zero. Anger, a lot. And then he would usually burst out laughing. And then it was good. Then it was okay. You know, confession is not that the other person makes you feel bad. Confession is that you admit, and then you have the other person as a witness, and he tells you, it's okay, don't worry, relax. Because with our negative actions that we keep, we become very tense, and then it's difficult to be a good person. So you need to learn to confess. It is such an incredible process what is going on, you know. But you need courage, and you need to have somebody that you trust. Yeah. So then also, I think, and so he told me, he told me, what do you expect? You've been practicing 2 years, you know. And he gave me the example of climbing a mountain. And I thought, how does he know I'm climbing mountains? I never told him before. He gave me the exact example that I could relate to. And so he's, you know, like kind of just continue, you will, because also you climb mountains, sometimes you really feel like, I can't go on anymore, but your arrogance wants to go to the top, and you just continue. Your arrogance does not allow you to go back, same as my arrogance did not allow me to drink when I had a headache on Yom Kippur. You know, so that can be a good thing, but it can also be a very bad thing. I almost fell to death once because of that. So it's like, you know, because nah, I want to. So and then he said, like, you know, just continue. And then so I said, so what shall I do? Because it's really uncomfortable. I just about hate everybody at Tushita. And it was true. I was behaving in a really bad way. You know, I was in bad mood all the time and hating everybody. I'm the only one who works, and the others, they just hang around. And blah, 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 blah. So then he told me, well, read the Heart Sutra. And I said, I do, it doesn't work. He wasn't sure. I wasn't reading the Heart Sutra. Then he said, okay, next time you're angry, go for a walk. And I thought, what kind of advice is that, you know? I wanted Yamantaka. Yamantaka is a wrathful deity. I wanted me to send me into a Yamantaka retreat so I could there be angry and destroy all evil with wrath, wah, wah. He tells me to go for a walk. So next time I got angry at Tushita, I was just about to say something. Like, and I remembered, so I left without saying anything. I went not even to the chai shop, which is like 2 minutes. And I thought, the thought came, I'm going to move out. And I did. And then normally you tell your teacher when you move out of the place where you live, you know, the center. But it just so happened that down the library, they had a room. Usually it's a 2-3 month waiting list. So I moved in, and then I thought, oui, I should have told Rinpoche. So I went to see him and I said, Rinpoche, I moved out. And he said, oh, better for you and better for the others. 3 months later, I moved back in because I could see they could survive without me. That was terrible. And I did miss the situation of Tushita where we would do pujas together and this, because living down at the library where it was Tibetan girl, Tibetan boy looking for Western girl, and parties every night, like the party we had like last night, but not until 10 o'clock, but until 2 in the morning with loud music, and nobody really practiced down there, you know. So 3 months later I moved back in, and the situation was the same, but I was happy. So this is, separate yourself from your object of anger and then work at it, you know. Don't work with your object, with your anger, when the object is there. Move away, go away, otherwise you cannot calm down. Okay? So that's why we have to be sure that the Buddhas do not, they will always help us, like a good mother. A good mother would never kick the child out. Never. If she kicks the child out, she does it because the child has to learn something, but not out of anger. Okay? If the lamas ignore us, it's because we have to learn something like that. Or because we don't need them, as I said before, usually. Justice as what brings pleasure to the dustly gone Buddhas, justice is what perfectly accomplish my own aims as well, meaningful enlightenment. Justice is what dispels the world's suffering too. Therefore, let it be justice that I always shall do. This is a, you know, developing what is called determination in the mind. That's what I want to do. Because the angry mind will go there and here and there and manifest again. So then this is when we read that. Oh no, that's actually not what I wanted to do. I wanted to practice patience. Okay, so this is for that. For example, even when some member of the royal court is harming the public, far-sighted people do not hurt him back, even if they are able. What could that mean? No, it says, even if you could. What could that mean? You see that in other texts, maybe it talks about the king. If you have some members of the court and they behave badly, and you would have a right to hurt them, but you don't hurt them because, you know, the king is very powerful and I'm going to get it at the end because of corruption, okay? Do you see what I mean? Okay, now who is the king here? Karma. Karma will get back at me, same as the king will come and get back at me. Okay? For that one, acting like this is not alone. Like this one from the court, he's not alone. He's got a lot of armies behind him there. On the contrary, the king's power and might are his military forces. Likewise, some lowly person creating harm is not to be belittled, because if we do that, we create the karma to be reborn in the hell states. Or in a suffering state. That's what we're afraid of. Okay, so, and we can do this, you know. We can not harm somebody by knowing that I get double back.
Does it relate also to the current lifetime, or only in the...
What, that you could get it back?
Yeah, I mean,
Well, you know, in the current lifetime, I will not be in a hell state because I'm a human. Okay?
But I mean, you are now beginning. I'm sorry, maybe misunderstanding of my how karma works. But you are now living on karma that's
from before.
From before. And what you're doing now is for later.
And for now also. It can, if it's very strong, it can. You can, you know, somebody who said she had a big clothes business and people were stealing clothes all the time, her employees, and she became a Buddhist. She's from Singapore. And she became a Buddhist, and then she talked to a Lama about this, and then the Lama asked her, "Are you honest? Are you honest? Are you paying all the bills?" And she said, "Well, I have to admit, you know, sometimes I fight for not paying, not because I cannot pay, but that because, you know, that." So he said, "Stop that and see what happens." And she did say, she might have lied, okay? But I don't know. It's Tara, I know her personally. She said the theft stopped because she started to really pay all the bills, not just on time, but whenever they came into the house. Have you noticed, I don't know if you do that as well, that you put off paying bills until the last moment, yet paying a bill is such a pleasant thing because then it's paid. Try to start to, the bill comes, you pay it, then you can forget about it, that's it, for your peace of mind. So it can ripen in this lifetime, that's true, but it most probably, they say, most of the karmic imprints that ripen in this life come from past lives. Definitely, you see, the karma to be reborn as a human, I must have created it in a past life. I cannot create it now because I became a human. And to be reborn in a hell, this cannot happen now. This will have to happen in my next life. I need to die before that. Okay, then 130. For his armed forces are the guards of the joyless realms. Okay? That we create ourselves. And all the compassionate ones. So like a commoner toward a violent king, I shall make all limited beings be pleased. Again, that might sound hypocritical. You want everybody to be happy. You want everybody to be pleased and all that. But it's just, again, to protect ourselves from creating negative karma. That's all. Should even such a king be enraged with me, could he inflict the pain of a joyless realm, which is what I'd brought to experience by having made limited beings displeased? So if a king, now again looking at the king, he cannot throw me in the lower state. It's only me who can throw me in the lower states. You see, other people can only kill you. They cannot make you be reborn in a lower state. But you can make you be reborn in a lower state. This is why the Tibetans think like this, okay? I think Demalocha Rinpoche, he taught that here when he was here in Tuval. You remember? He said, "What do you think? When somebody beats you, you have to think, oh, at least he didn't injure me, he only beat me. He injures you, you think, oh, he didn't cut off an arm. He cuts off an arm, you think, well, at least he didn't kill me. He kills you, then you think, at least he can't throw me in the lower states." This is Tibetan thinking. And look at the Tibetans. You know, like many, many people had traumas from the Holocaust, right? I mean, you're the first ones who know. Not that many Tibetans. They just continue with their life because they have these views and they trained them before it happened. Now, the young ones now, they don't have these views anymore. They're just like us, you know, selfish, wanting to fight. And then the Dalai Lama says, "So how shall we fight the Chinese army? First we need weapons. How on earth are we going to bring the weapons into Tibet? Carrying them over the mountains? Dropping them with helicopters? Where's the money coming from? They totally outnumber us, right? So it's like, they will kill us all." And that's logic, that's reasoning, that's kind of common sense. And he also said, "Good thing nobody came to help us. Because if they would have come to help us, Chinese army is so big and they're so powerful, a lot of Americans, who knows who, would have died for what? For nothing. And it's really nice, no? And it's really nice that he says, my policy of non-violence was not successful. We did not get the country back, but I will never give it up. I will never give up my practice of non-violence against the Chinese, my view of non-violence. Because you see, if with violence we could get all the things back that belong to us, then everybody would have what they want. I mean, voice is really not the solution. I'm sorry to say. Yeah?
Why didn't
he
stay in Tibet? Why didn't he stay in Tibet?
Because his people wanted to protect him, and many would have died by protecting him. So that's why he left. Because he was invited by the Chinese to go to a theater so that they could capture him, and his people were making a human wall around the Potala, and actually, because the Chinese thought they were still there, many of them got killed, even though he had already gone. But when they saw that he's not there anymore, then they stopped. Yeah. And also exactly why he didn't stay there, I don't think I'm the right person to answer that, because I don't know. You know, these are questions that you have to ask the Dalai Lama. Why did you not stay in Tibet? I don't know. I can't read his mind. Okay? And for me, this is maybe why I embarked into Buddhism. Because, as I said, you know, I was always fighting for animal rights and human rights and against this and against that and smashing windows against the Vietnam War and, you know, in Switzerland and in Italy. You know, it's like hating my mother at the same time, you know. I mean, how much more hypocritical can you be, asking somebody else to stop a war while you are at war with your mom? I mean, this is what youth does. I was 18 in 68, so maybe you remember people my age, what happened at that time, you know. Everybody in the streets, violent, burning, smashing windows, and wah, yoo-hoo, you know. You felt like doing something really good. Ah. So then when I read his book, My Land and My People, I was really inspired how he talked about the Chinese. And that is what attracted me. This non-violent view of somebody who had really been harmed, and his whole people, you know. That he talked with compassion and not with anger. And also Rinpoche Rinpoche, who was in prison 17 years. He was tortured. Then he was in a wheelchair. He was a really damaged body. And he came to teach at Tushita sometimes also. Now he's passed away. He's reborn. And he's maybe 3-4 maybe now. And somebody asked him, what do you think about the Chinese? And then he said, but without being cynical, I can't really say that the Chinese helped Tibet very much, because that's the idea. That's why the armies of Mao Zedong came, to liberate them. Yeah, that was behind the whole thing. He said it wasn't really helpful. I mean, it really didn't help the Tibetan population. But then he said, but you know, there is just as much Chinese who suffer under this government, if not more than Tibetans. So he said, it's not the Chinese people, it's the system, it's the government that lies at fault. And he said that with incredible compassion. And when he talked about being in prison, you know, remember, I think it was Antonio, or maybe Andrea. He was complaining that he had to go to Australia. He didn't want to go to Australia because the weather is hot, blah, blah, blah. So Rinpoche starts to just tell a story saying, well, you know, one day they had this crazy idea that they would just tie my hands behind my neck, my back, and they would just leave me like that. You know, I couldn't lower my pants when I had to go to the toilet. It was very difficult to sit down and stand up, and they just left me like that for a few days. So if you hear that you're complaining about having to go to Australia, and then you hear him telling that and say, you know, imagine they had this idea. I don't know why. This is how he talked, you know. And then you go to Australia, it's really no problem. This is how he helped us. Or he had a very very, very, very antique statue, which probably had special powers on top of it. And he said he was always very worried about that one. And the first thing they did, they took this away. And he said, then I didn't have to worry anymore. And you know, there's this story about this Tibetan Lama. Somebody gives him an ancient Chinese cup who is worth, I don't know how many millions, whatever. And you know, his attendant always very careful. And he, on purpose, when he got into the car with the door, he knocked that cup over and said, now finished, okay, now we can become normal again. And drink tea for drinking tea and not because of this stupid cup. Now, you don't think, you don't have to be inspired by that. I am inspired by these things. This, for me, is free people, you know. You see, if you go to a, if you decide to go to a retreat, you have the same conditions as a prisoner. I was doing like 2 months retreats in Tushita. I didn't go out. I didn't see anybody. Food was brought to in front of my room. I would just take it in. I had a toilet in the room. But because I decided to do it myself, it was okay. And there is I think it's Ken Wilber, or I can't remember who it is, who was in the Korea War. And he was a Buddhist practitioner, I can't remember who. He was a Buddhist practitioner, and then he was captured by the Korean. And he said, I just continued my practice in prison. It was the same conditions. Yeah. It was even better because there was no temptation to go out. Because I couldn't. They even protected me. And I just continued to do my practice. So for me, I find this inspiring. But I totally understand if you don't find it inspiring. Because it seems perverse if you don't really know the people. Because if you know some of these people, of these high lamas, how they are, then you can... You know, then you can really think, wow, I want to become like them. And it's through these practices that they have become like this. They were not born like that. So a king cannot throw you into the lower states. Should even such a king be pleased with me, it is impossible that he could bestow Buddhahood, which is what he brought to attain by having made limited beings be pleased. I can attain Buddhahood by not harming others and by being as much benefit to them as possible, but the king cannot give me Buddhahood, even if he's my best friend. Leave aside, seeing that the future attainment of Buddhahood arises from making limited beings be pleased, don't you see that at least in this life great prosperity, fame and happiness come? Hitler is very famous, but also Mother Teresa is very famous. Who do you think is more protected from being harmed? Hitler, with all his armies? He got killed at the end. No, he committed suicide, sorry. Or Mother Teresa? Who is more famous? I mean, that kind of fame. Is Mother Teresa, you know? Martin Luther King, Nelson Mandela. Let's be inspired by these people. Yeah? Who also, Nelson Mandela has been in prison for I don't know how many years. And he came out such a wonderful person, you know? So even in this life, as you were asking, does it have an effect on your life now, the karma? Yeah? Prosperity can come, fame, happiness, and all this. You know, do you think I thought 24 years ago I could go to numerous country without having to book a hotel and still have a bed? 25 years ago, I wanted to go somewhere, I always had to book a hotel. Now I have beds everywhere, for free. And nice houses sometimes, really, wow. You know? Yeah. Lucky me, really. And I didn't plan it. Ripening of karma. Ripening of positive karma. So this is why sometimes I wash the dishes so I'm not in these houses, so I'm not exhausting all my positive karma. By the way, if I want to wash the dishes, please let me do so, because I love it. I don't think so. No, because if somebody has a poor house, I go there.
No, going from a resort to resort.
It's not resorts, it's private people's houses.
What? It's a resort. Is that their resort?
I don't quite understand what you mean. I don't quite understand. Because I'm not booking, I get invited.
Yes, I know.
My mother was seeking these places. I'm not seeking them. Somebody has a very modest house, you know. Sometimes I sleep in people's kitchen, on a couch, in the living room. It's fine. It's okay. My mother would not have slept in somebody's kitchen. She would have moved out and booked a hotel and paid for it. Do you see what I mean? So I don't think it's quite the same thing. Moreover, with beauty and so on, freedom from sickness and fame, someone with patience will still, while still in samsara, gains extremely long life and the abundant pleasures of a universal chakra king. So these are the worldly benefits. Kind of, you will be healthier because anger, you know, robs you of sleep. You don't have appetite or you overeat, you know, either one. And you don't have happiness. You're not relaxed. You get sick. And it can be imploding anger or exploding anger. It's the same thing. So actually the one who gets damaged again with this whole anger thing is you. Yes. No, why not? We are worldly. Come on. He knows us, so we are worldly. So he say, okay, even you don't, you know, even already now there's benefit. You know, sometimes says we have to bear hardships, and there's no benefit now. It's only hardship, yeah. But we do it for Buddhahood. And this one, you already get benefit now. And then, if you don't like it, Gidi, you just next. You don't look at the 134. You say, no, I'm not doing anything for worldly gain. I will do that only for whatever. Okay, let's see these last questions. Here's about suicide, you know, what kind of karma does it make? And if somebody makes an atom bomb, what kind of karma does it make? Remember karma, it depends on the intention. So if the scientist had no intention to go and kill people with that bombs, of course he doesn't get any karma. But if he had the intention, you know, then he gets. Suicide you can do with a lot of different motivations. You can be a drug addict, you don't succeed to get off it, you constantly steal money from your mother and you say, I want to rid my mother of my existence, and you kill yourself. Usually, I think suicide, if you talk to people who have not succeeded, is usually not even to make other people feel guilty. That's quite rare, or maybe these people all succeed. I don't know, because I've never heard anybody say like that. And but what everybody says, when the thought is there, it's all about me. I can't bear what's going on, and not thinking about the suffering that they're creating. So please don't do it. In Buddhist terms, it doesn't help, because you take all your problems, you take to your next life. On top of it, there is always a lot of guilt and a lot of, you know, negative emotions, like unpleasant emotions from the people who stay behind, even if you do it with exit. Exit is this thing that gives you the medicine that you drink and then you die when you have been proven kind of that you can't cure, can't be cured. Yeah, on top of it, you're killing someone. So you're killing a Buddha potential. That's a very good point also. You are somebody, so even if it's voluntarily, the object is you, yeah. It's the act of killing. So it never creates happiness.
And to kill someone for having compassion and mercy about it, like someone really, really sick.
It's a difficult question that I cannot answer, you know, because I saw this movie, El Mar Adentro, The Sea Inside. The sea within, sea inside, and mar adentro. If you watch that movie, at the end also, I said, I don't know. Okay. Again, this was another Rinpoche, Dakpo Rinpoche. He was teaching on death and dying, and he said, yeah, if you do this all these things, it's suicide or it's killing. And so I asked him, I said, what about if you're a spiritual practitioner? Because there is certain meditations that you can do at the time of death, like these lamas do, so you stay in the clear light. And you feel that your capacities are vanishing because of your body's sickness, and you decide that you're going to die now so that you can still do the meditation while you're still capable. Is it still suicide? And then Rinpoche said, well, if you know that you will be reborn as human and you can continue with your practice, that's fine. Because then you just get a new body. And then he added, but if you know that, you don't need to drink a substance. Because then you have the capacities to eject the consciousness. To make yourself die without any substance, you know. To just, and then that's it. And he said, for somebody who practices, you would take the teachings and think, I'm exhausting negative karma. I allow other people who look after me to create mitzvahs, to create positive karma, to create compassion. To, you know, even as a sick person, you can be of benefit to others because they look after you. So these are acts of compassion. And then that should help you to bear the sickness. And painkillers and all this is perfectly okay. Okay, it's not that you have to endure. But then he also said, but for somebody who has no practice, he said, I don't know. Let them decide themselves. Demented.
No, vegetable.
Well, you see, from the scriptures we don't know, because there were no machines at that time to keep them alive. You should not, maybe, don't put them on the machine. Then they go their way, for example. I have, by the way, if I have an accident, I have it in my bags. Please don't put me on any of these machines. I have exact instructions what I want you to do if I die, and they're in my small backpack. Whom to phone, where to send, ashes. Can I be burned here in Israel?
Yes.
Yeah, you are? Okay. Please bring me to a secret place so I can be burned. Exactly. Near the swimming pool. Because I would like the ashes to go to Dharamsala so they can go into Tzatzit. It's all written down. Okay? Whom to contact, whom to give the money that is in the bag to, la 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 la. And so it's good to do these things. And have them ready. It will make it easy for people to then they know what to do. It's not morose. It's quite strange though when you do this for the first time. And sometimes I change things, you know. I look at it and then I change it. So when you think, hey, I'm talking about my own death here. Yeah? And somebody will read that at one point and do these things. So yeah, you know, it's a very, very difficult decision. And we had somebody here in Israel, a young woman. She had made a promise to her grandmother that she would kill the grandmother when it was time to and you know, she just couldn't keep that promise. Don't put pressure on people like that, you know. If you say, don't put me on any machine, that's fine. Then they know and that's it and they let you go. Yeah, it's amazing how today we don't let people go. You know, we try everything to keep them here. So... Yeah. 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 That's good if he can. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. 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 So if you say no, we don't want to put her on machines, that's not killing her. That's not an act of killing her. That's just letting nature go its way. Yeah, these are very difficult questions and I'm afraid we don't have enough time to discuss them. If I don't react, the patience, does the karma exhaust or does it double? Don't know. I mean, what do you mean? No. Well, I said, negative karma gets exhausted two ways. When you are hurt or you have situations you don't like, or when you purify with the four factors, then negative karma gets exhausted. So of course, if somebody harms you and you're not getting angry and you're not paying it back, then it gets exhausted. But if you pay it back, then it's not doubled, but you make new seeds from anger. I think that's about it. That with the atom bomb, is that okay also? Yeah. You know, fame has become so, like, science is not necessarily a good thing, you know. It depends what we make of it. So the same thing for a human mind, a human rebirth. Not every human rebirth is precious. It only becomes precious when you do something beneficial with it. Because human mind is the intellect is so powerful, we can then, you know, design atom bombs and things like that. So then it's better to be an animal.
But when you are a scientist, if you build a tank,
or then you know what it's for. Yeah.
But
you don't give, again, you know, karma is very complex. You don't give the direct thing to go and kill, for example. You can think, honestly, it's for the defending of my country. That's what every country does. This is why we have no war ministers. We only have a ministry of defense. Every country is only defending itself.
I'm not even asking about that.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm debating. No. I'm a scientist.
Good.
I'm creating technology. This technology can easily grow into
all
sort of things. And I can project it. Although I didn't need it.
Yeah. So if you really didn't mean it, then you don't create the karma. But still, you know that it could go that way. So, you know, this is why the laws are being made that it's, for example, it's forbidden the stem cells and all this. It's like some countries, they're allowed to use them. Some other countries, they're not. It's like, again, it's Shlomo's answer, where is the border? I don't know. You know, again, we have to see all these scientific things. What's the purpose? Is it really making a better society, or is it just making people live longer, for example? Then what's the point of having a long life if your life is miserable? You know? There's very, very deep questions that cannot be answered like this. But if you don't mean it, of course you don't create the karma, because karma is always intention, the action, the object, the completion. So in order to have an action of killing, you need the intention to kill. You need the object that you want to kill, and it has to be the right object. You need to do the action of killing, either you or telling somebody else. And the completion, the person or the being dies. Then an action of killing is complete. Stealing, your intention of taking what is not being given. You know the object, what it is. The action is you take it, you hide it, and then you think, now it's mine. Then the action is completed. Even if somebody comes and takes it away from you, the moment you think, now it's mine, that's it. If you still have a thing, maybe I should give it back one day, it's not complete.
Can you give a good example, a positive example? You always give a negative.
Yeah, because we have to be careful about these negative actions. Okay. Creating an act of generosity, for example. Saving lives. I see a fly that fell into a pond. You don't have many. Oh yeah, there's ponds here. I take a twig, so that the intention is to save the fly's life, right? I take a twig, that's the action. The object is the fly. I fish it out, the fly flies away. That's it. That's a positive act of saving a life. When these four factors are present, action of generosity, there is a homeless person, I see him, I'm happy that I can practice generosity, right? Not out of guilt or whatever. Great, somebody here, an object to practice generosity with. The action is I give him the money or whatever. The completion is, I think, one point may I give you Dharma. You know? Yes. It's not one of the 10 negative actions, no. that's fine. There's no problem with that.
No, the opposite. Is it a good karma?
Depends on your intention. I want a child. I want a child. Or I want to give somebody life that then later I can let go. I want to give somebody a good education because I have the capacity to do so, but it's not my child. I just give my body for that person to be born. But if it's I want a child so that I have something that is mine, what's the intention there? You think positive or maybe a little bit dangerous? And that's what happens very often, you know, thinking that these are my children. It hurts me a little bit when I hear mothers or fathers say to the kid, my child is not doing that. You know? They're not yours. They have chosen to come into your family, that's about it. Okay, I'll read the whole chapter. It's only 130 something verses. It's not very long, you know. You know, I do recitations, reading things like for 2 or 2.5 hours sometimes. It's okay. So.
How do you read it in Tibetan?
I don't read Tibetan. I don't speak Tibetan. It's very good for my arrogance. I know quite a few languages, but not Tibetan. I've lived amongst the Tibetans for 17 years, and I never managed to learn it. So when people who study Tibetan here, and they know that I've been, they say, oh, then you must speak Tibetan, and I have to say, no, I don't. It's very good for my arrogance. Against my arrogance, I mean. Because they go, what? Oh, sorry. Oh, is there a view on depression? Yeah, it comes from harming others, making others afraid.
Depression is?
No, depression is a part of the mind, it's a mental factor. If it's a physical factor, you could really cut it out. Can you cut it out, like an operation? Some part of the brain and you're not depressed anymore?
No, something is lacking.
A hormone is lacking.
Yeah,
oh, that's the physical reaction to it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so do you think the Buddha knew these things and wrote something about it in his books? About hormones and things like that? Brain surgery, neuroscience? Don't know. But the fact that you have this hormone that is missing, that is karma. And that is karma from... Depression very often comes from not getting what you want. You have high goals or whatever and you don't get what you want. And also the karma from sexual misconduct, from cheating on your partners. Not sexual misconduct, violent one, but from that's what Lama Zopa Rinpoche said. Because it's true, if your partner goes off and you still trust and love that person, it does create depression in you. Okay? So then that could be one of the causes also. And also having harmed others, basically. Because depression is always a lot of fear. And a lot of self-concern, you know, in depression. Because it's just I, me, nobody else. Yeah. And have you ever tried to make somebody laugh when they are depressed? Because if they could laugh, the depression would be finished. But they refuse to laugh, you know. And the sad thing about depression is they can't bear when somebody else is happy. Yeah. So instead of benefiting from the happiness of others, they try to destroy the happiness of a big problem these days, depression, you know. And a lot of money in there for these people who give you these hormones, like what's it called, Lexotanil and all these kind of medicines, who make you highly and heavily and quickly dependent on them. But do take them. If you have a doctor that you really trust and it's really not going otherwise, do take them, but with the wish to be then able to leave them beside. But when you take them, don't see them as poison. Don't see them as just, you know, having side effects negative. See them as help, because then they can really help you. Otherwise, if you see them as poison and you go around telling everybody, oh, I have to take these medicines, but it's terrible, blah, 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 they cannot do their job. And it's okay, we take medicine for headache, why not take medicine for depression? The only thing is, like, they do make you dependent. Another medicine, I can't remember what's it called, I had a friend who had like Crohn's disease or something like that, and it's really painful. So she got medicine that takes away the pain. Then the body got so used of not having pain, even when the sickness was gone, the body was not able to bear the normal pains anymore, because the body had gotten used to having no pain. This is the dependency. So also maybe with these psychiatric kind of drugs, that's probably what the mind does. Then the mind is totally calm, and the mind likes that. So when you take it away, the mind freaks out because it's used to be in peace. Yeah. So then you get dependent on these things. Okay. Yeah, depression is because it totally blocks you. I mean, it's like, this, as an outside person, there's not much you can do. I mean, you can constantly kind of try to make the person see the positive side, but they refuse it. They don't want to, you know. I have somebody like this at the moment I'm quite close contact with, that is like, you know, I always try to point out the positive sides, but, you know, because with my knee operation, then she asked me where I go, so I said, well, I'm going to stay with Liselotte. She said, oh, wow, you know, you really have good friends, as if she doesn't have any, you know. So I said, hey, excuse me, you know, I'm spending a lot of thoughts on you and how to help you. What are you kind of hinting here that you don't have any friends? I said, oh, yeah, it's true. And I'm not the only one. There's quite a group around her who's trying to help her, you know. So it's like, it's these kind of things. Not making her feel guilty, but using that in a bit of a humorous way. When she said, oh, yeah, you have a very good friend. I was sacrificing my weekend for her and staying with her that weekend, you know.
Do you find it
so
that someone can control it?
No. I think so. Someone, whom do you think someone? Whom do you talking about when you say someone? Who someone? Which person? A person who has no practice? No.
No practice.
Then no. No, I don't think so. Unless they have really good psychologists who, and they trust them and they tell them what to think. I used to have in my, menopause, I had periods of depression, and I would then just stay at home because I knew I was in a bad mood, so I would not go out because I didn't want to hurt anybody. Also, you don't feel like going out, yeah. So then I would just lie in bed and put all the people in front of me who had been kind to me at one point, and they're not all spiritual practitioners who practice patience with me and bear me. So I thought, I can't be that terrible that I think I am right now. And then I also thought, I kind of saw how I make them suffer when I'm in such a state, and very quickly it lifted up, because then from me, I went to all these people, and I remembered moments that we had together and that we still have, and this helped very much, opening the heart towards others, you know, because when you're just here, me, then of course the problem is very big, yeah. So this is what I'm saying, a spiritual practitioner, I think, no. And also I was thinking, oh great, today again, negative karma ripening, I can stay home, the wash machine is going. And I didn't do anything that day. I didn't want to be active over there. I just gave myself the space to be home and not do anything. And it used to pass quite quickly. Okay. Whatever wholesome deeds, such as venerating the Buddhas and generosity that have been amassed over 1,000 eons, will all be destroyed in one moment of anger. There is no evil like hatred and no fortitude like patience. Thus, I should strive in various ways to meditate on patience. My mind will not experience peace if it fosters painful thoughts of hatred. I shall find no joy or happiness. Unable to sleep, I shall feel unsettled. A master who has hatred is in danger of being killed, even by those who, for their wealth and happiness, depend upon his kindness. By it, friends and relatives are disheartened. Though drawn by my generosity, they will not trust me. In brief, there is nobody who lives happily with anger. Hence the enemy anger creates suffering such as these, but whoever assiduously overcomes it finds happiness now and hereafter. Having found its fuel of mental unhappiness in the prevention of what I wish for, and in the doing of what I do not want, hatred increases and then destroys me. Therefore, I should totally eradicate the fuel of this enemy, for this enemy has no other function than that of causing me harm. Whatever befalls me, it shall not disturb my mental joy, for having been made unhappy, I shall not accomplish what I wish, and my virtues will decline. Why be unhappy about something if it can be remedied? And what is the use of being unhappy about something if it cannot be remedied? For myself and for my friends, I want no suffering, no disrespect, no harsh words, and nothing unpleasant. But for my enemies, it is the opposite. The causes of happiness sometimes occur, but the causes of suffering are very many. Without suffering, there is no renunciation. Therefore, mind, you should stand firm. If some ascetics and the people of Karnapa endure the pain of cuts and burns for no reason, then for the sake of liberation, why have I no courage? There is nothing whatsoever that is not made easier through true acquaintance, so through becoming acquainted with small harms, I should learn to patiently accept greater harms. Who has not seen this to be so with trifling sufferings, such as bites of snakes and insects, feelings of hunger and thirst, and with such minor things as rashes? I should not be impatient with heat and cold, wind and rain, sickness, bondage and beatings, for if I am, the harm that caused me will increase. Some, when they see their own blood, become especially brave and steady, but some, when they see the blood of others, faint and fall unconscious. These reactions come from the mind, being either steady or timid. Therefore, I should disregard harms caused to me and not be affected by suffering. Even when the wise are suffering, their minds remain very lucid and undefiled, for when war is being waged against the disturbing conception, much harm is caused at the time of battle. The victorious warriors are those who, having disregarded all suffering, vanquished the foes of hatred and so forth. Common warriors slay only corpses. That means you don't have to kill your enemy, he will die by himself. Furthermore, suffering has good qualities. Through being disheartened with it, arrogance is dispelled. Compassion arises for those in cyclic existence, evil is shunned, and joy is found in virtue. As I do not become angry with great sources of suffering such as jaundice, then why be angry with animate creatures? They too are provoked by conditions. Although they are not wished for, those sicknesses arise, and likewise, although they are not wished for, these disturbing conceptions forcibly arise. Without thinking, I shall be angry, people become angry with no resistance, and without thinking, I shall produce myself, likewise, anger itself is produced. All mistakes that are, and all the various kinds of evil, arise through the force of conditions. They do not govern themselves. These conditions that assemble together have no intention to produce anything, and neither does their product have the intention to be produced. That which is asserted as primal substance, and that which is imputed as a self, since they are unproduced, they do not arise after having purposefully thought, I shall arise in order to cause harm. Here he is refuting the Samkhya view. If they are unproduced and non-existent, then whatever wish they have to produce, harm will also not exist. Since this self would permanently apprehend its objects, it follows that it would never cease to do so. Furthermore, if the self were permanent, it would clearly be devoid of action like space. So even if I met with other conditions, how could its unchanging nature be affected? Even if when acted upon by other conditions it remains as before, then what could action do to it? Thus, if I say that this conditions acts upon a permanent self, how could the two ever be causally related? So here he is refuting a permanent Atman. Hence, everything is governed by other factors, which in turn are governed by others, and in this way nothing governs itself. Having understood this, I shall not become angry with phenomena that are just like apparitions. If everything is unreal, like an apparition, then who is there to restrain from what? Surely in this case, restraint would be inappropriate. It would not be inappropriate because conventionally I must maintain that independence upon restraining anger, the stream of suffering is severed. So, okay, that might be a little bit not easy to understand. It's just for you to hear, that's all. You don't need to understand it. Because what he's doing here, he's debating. So this one is the view of the opponent. That's not his view. That's the view of the opponent. So when seeing an enemy or even a friend committing an improper action by thinking that such things arise from conditions, I shall remain in a happy frame of mind. If things were brought into being by choice, then since no one wishes to suffer, suffering would not occur to an embodied creature. Through not being careful, people even harm themselves with thorns and other things, and for the sake of obtaining women and the like, they become obsessed and deprive themselves of food. And there are some who injure themselves through the unmeritorious deeds of hanging themselves, leaping from cliffs, eating poison and unhealthy food. If when under the influence of disturbing conceptions, people will even kill their treasured selves, how can they be expected not to cause harm to the bodies of other living beings? Even if I cannot develop compassion for all such people who through the arisal of disturbing conceptions set out to try and kill me and so forth, the last thing I should do is to become angry with them. Even if it were the nature of the childish to cause harm to other beings, it would still be incorrect to be angry with them, for this would be like begrudging fire for having the nature to burn. And even if the fault were temporary, and they who are by nature reliable, it would still be incorrect to be angry, for this would be like begrudging space for allowing smoke to arise in it. If I become angry with the wielder, although I'm actually harmed by his stick, then since he too is secondary, being in turn incited by hatred, I should be angry with his hatred instead. Previously, I must have caused similar harm to other sentient beings. Therefore, it is right for this harm to be returned to me, who is the cause of injury to others. Both the weapon and my body are the causes of my suffering. Since he gave rise to the weapon and I too to the body, with whom should I be angry? If in blind attachment I cling to this suffering abscess of a human form, which cannot bear to be touched, with whom should I be angry when it is hurt? It is the fault of the childish that they are hurt, for although they do not wish to suffer, they are greatly attached to its causes, so why should they be angry with others? Just like the guardians of the hells and the forest of razor-sharp leaves, so is the suffering produced by my actions, with whom therefore should I be angry? Having been instigated by my own actions, those who cause me harm come into being. If by these actions they should fall into hell, surely isn't it I who am destroying them? In dependence upon them I purify many evils, by patiently accepting the harms that they cause. But in dependence upon me, they will fall into hellish pain for a very long time. So since I'm causing harm to them and they are benefiting me, why, unruly mind, do you become angry in such a mistaken manner? If my mind has the noble quality of patience, I shall not go to hell. But although I'm protecting myself in this way, how will it be so for them? Nevertheless, should I return the harm, I will not protect them either. By doing so, my conduct will deteriorate, and hence this fortitude will be destroyed. Since my mind is not physical, in no way can anyone destroy it, but through its being greatly attached to my body, it is caused harm by physical suffering. Since disrespect, harsh speech, and unpleasant words do not cause any harm to my body, why, mind, do you become so angry? Because others will dislike me, but since it will not devour me, either in this or another life, why do I not want this dislike? Because it will hinder my worldly gain. Even if I do not want this, I shall have to leave my worldly gains behind, and my evil alone will remain unmoved. Thus it is better that I die today than live a long but wicked life. For even if people like me should live a long life, there will always be the suffering of death. Suppose someone should awaken from a dream in which he experienced 100 years of happiness, and suppose another should awaken from a dream in which he experienced just one moment of happiness. For both of these people who have awoken, the happiness will never return. Similarly, whether my life has been long or short, at the time of death, it will be finished like this. Although I may live happily for a long time, through obtaining a great deal of material wealth, I shall go forth empty-handed and destitute, just like having been robbed by a thief. Surely material wealth will enable me to live, and then I shall be able to consume evil and do good, but if I am angry on account of it, will not my merit be consumed and evil increase? And what use will be the life of one who only commits evil, if for the sake of material gain he causes the merits needed for life to degenerate? Surely I should not be angry with those who say unpleasant things that weaken other beings' confidence in me. But in the same way, why I am not angry with people who say unpleasant things about others? If I can patiently accept this lack of confidence because it is related to someone else, then why I am not patient with unpleasant words about myself, since they are related to the arisal of disturbing conceptions? Should others talk badly or even destroy holy images, reliquaries, and the sacred Dharma, it is improper for me to resent it, for the Buddhas can never be injured. I should prevent anger rising towards those who injure my spiritual masters, relatives, and friends. Instead, I should see, as in the manner shown before, that such things arise from conditions. Since embodied creatures are injured by both animate beings or inanimate objects, why only bear malice to the animate? It follows that I should patiently accept all harm. Should one person ignorantly do wrong and another ignorantly become angry with him, who would be at fault and who would be without fault? Why did I previously commit these actions, because of which others now cause me harm? Since everything is related to my actions, why should I bear malice towards these enemies? When I have seen this to be so, I should strive for what is meritorious, in order to certainly bring about loving thoughts between all. For example, when a fire in a house has moved into another house, it is right to get rid of straw and such things that will cause the fire to spread. Likewise, when the fire of hatred spreads to whatever my mind is attached to, I should immediately get rid of it for fear of my merit being burned. Why is a man condemned to death not fortunate if he is released after having his hand cut off? Why am I, who am experiencing human misery, not fortunate if by that I am spared from the agonies of hell? If I am unable to endure even the mere sufferings of the present, then why do I not restrain myself from being angry, which will be the source of hellish misery? So this was up to verse 74. The rest we read and we did. And now you got the whole chapter. Okay, it's 4:15. Do you want to just quickly get up, stretch your legs a little bit? If you need pee-pee, you go pee-pee. And then we do just a final, very short meditation.